This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
Today, world headquarters in Elk Grove, California. This is episode number 100 of the Beer of the Day podcast. Tonight we have the whole crew back in town, and we've got six different beers to try tonight. A passion fruit sour, a couple of Northeast IPAs, an anniversary beer from Unibro, and one we've been saving in the vault for a while, a second anniversary Ninkasi Ground Control beer, one of the favorite beers we've had on this show ever. I'm Dallas Helliker. Joining me tonight, Andy Hamilton.
Hello.
Britton and Joel Miner.
What's going on?
And remotely on Skype from Pasadena, Jeff Miller. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
Man, I'm pumped.
We've been doing these shows remotely for a while and, you know, on Skype, on the computer, and it really is better to be in the same room around a bunch of microphones. So we should do it in person more often.
We should.
All right. Before we get into the first beer, anyone have any interesting beers they've had lately they wanted to talk about?
We had one tonight, and you're going to have to help me because I can't remember much about it, but it was a...
Is that good?
Yeah. No, the segment is called Interesting Beers. It didn't say good beers, but it was decent. It was an IPA with muscat grapes and what was the other thing?
Riesling.
Oh, and Riesling grapes. Like it was interesting because it wasn't super sweet, but you could definitely tell, like you could definitely taste what, you know.
The white wine qualities.
Yes.
So you would think this is that Flatland. You think of Riesling and Muscat as like the super sweet wines, orange Muscat and Riesling. They're both high sugar wines. This actually wasn't overwhelming on that. You just got a little of that character in the beer. It was quite good. If you're ever in the Sacramento area, you want a good brewery, go to Flatland in Elk Grove, right here where we record this show.
We had one. Joel and I went to Burning Barrel in Rancho Cordova for Father's Day, and we had a golden stout that was brewed in collaboration with Highwater. So Campfire Stout's probably one of my favorite staple beers. It tasted a lot like that, but different enough that I like. It was really good. I got a couple,
and it was on nitro, which always helps.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Jeff, what have you had?
Well, I had a lot of beers this week because it was LA Beer Week. Which is great for me being a local LA resident. But the one beer that stood out the most to me, I actually had just right before the week started. It was the 8th anniversary beer from El Segundo Brewing called Ochos Locos. It was, I think, 8.8% double IPA. Delicious flavor, but what stood out to me the most was that it was the like dankest, hoppiest double IPA I think I've had in the last couple of years. So I'm not sure how much longer it's going to be around, but it was phenomenal for anybody that wants to go seek that one out.
Would you call it a West Coast style IPA?
Yeah, for sure. It was very, very much your style. Bitter, you know, bitter, crystal clear color, very West Coast style, delicious.
It's good to find those every once in a while. I tried, because I knew Joel was going to be here, I tried to find some like traditional IPAs tonight. And apparently they don't make them anymore. So I had to get a couple of Northeast ones for him. And so we're going to do those as the third and fourth beer of the show.
But West Coast IPAs are making their comeback. Just let everybody know it's going to happen.
They're still around.
There's going to be like a 10-year cycle. Everything that was cool 10 years ago will be cool again.
Right. It's like disco
was here, and then all of a sudden grunge had to happen. There's always an answer to any trend.
And then it circles back around.
Circles back around. So it will circle around again, without a doubt. All right, let's get into the first beer of the night. We have a petite sour passion fruit beer from Crooked Stave Artesian Beer Projects in Denver, Colorado.
Has anybody been here?
To Crooked Stave?
Yeah.
Not to the brewery, but I've had a few of their beers.
I know some of us have gone through Denver. I've never been to this brewery.
I've been to the airport several times.
So I was in Denver last year. We did not go to the brewery, but Crooked Stave was widely available. I didn't have this beer, but I had a lot of their beers. Very good.
It's hazy. Very hazy.
And the aroma is sour. I get the Brettanomyces immediately.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic aroma. I mean, I guess I get passion fruit.
A little bit of champagne.
It smells great, yeah.
You get those sour beer qualities, the Brettanomyces, the yeast. But then if you zero in on that and you accept that, then you try to get in on the fruit flavor. I think passion fruit is there in the aroma.
I think so, too. And I also get a little bit of pineapple.
Mm. Tropical fruit, for sure. You know what it smells like? And this is not to... Like, it smells phenomenal, but it smells like those little cans of, like, Dole pineapple fruit when you open it, or the mixed fruit. Mm-hmm. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's got, like, peaches and pears and everything.
Yeah, all those little canned fruits in the
Dole. I only eat fresh fruit, so
no. Your little snack pack from when you were a kid? That's what it smells like.
Mm-hmm.
How chemically did that cherry taste?
And this is like a straw color. Like Britton said, it's a little hazy. There's not that many bubbles. I think I'm looking around. I think Dallas might have the most bubbles out of everybody. And it's very, very minimal.
I only have four.
He's counted them.
It's interesting though. Like on the level of sour, it is sour, but it doesn't have like that twinge in the back of your jaw. Like it's not that.
Like a watery sour.
It's a little watery, but not in necessarily a bad way. It's just I actually enjoy it quite a bit. It's giving me a little bit of the heartburn feeling that I get from some sours, but I think that's kind of expected. It's more of a personal thing than.
Seems like it'd be a good grass cutting sour beer, something that you could
cut grass to
drink.
It's pretty mild though. Yeah, like it's this mild. Sourness is really tame. It's not even very tart.
No,
I mean some beers are tart and acidic. This has some sourness, but it's really not as sour as I expected.
We've had Ghosts that are more sour than this beer.
Yeah,
we have. I like it, though. I think sometimes the sour gets a little overwhelming. Like, you have to pucker up, and it's like it's a chore to drink a beer. This one, little tart, little sour. It's there, but it's not overwhelming. You're not having to, like... it's not like having to prepare yourself to take that Warhead candy,
right.
You know?
Not at all.
It's fine.
I think it's suffering a little bit from a lack of carbonation, though. I tend to rely on carbonation to help deliver, like, the various flavors around on my palate, and I'm feeling like I'm not getting a lot of that. And that doesn't mean that it's not flavorful, but I feel like I would enjoy the experience more if it were more carbonated.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you said, I think someone said it was pineapple. I do get, like, a pineapple orange juice flavor. Like, if you ever had the Dole pineapple orange juice.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. That's kind of what I get without, but there's not the ton of sweetness that's usually associated with those fruit juices.
I agree with Britton. I mean, it's low carbonation. It's got a little bit of a syrupy mouthfeel, but I think this is a beer that, based on the temperature that it's poured at, is really going to influence the flavor. Mine is super cold, and I'm trying to like hold my glass to warm it up a little bit because I think it will get a little bit more body as it warms up. But I like it. It's tasty. This is my kind of sour.
Ours is a little cool too. We went to the beer fridge, the beer of the day beer vault this morning or earlier today. And like half the bottles had like a little frost on the outside. So I'm trying to warm this next one up.
I think there's some oak flavors. I mean, you get some barrel flavors. It's not super funky, but you can definitely tell that it was aged in oak barrels.
I do get a little bit of the passion fruit too, but I think it's very subtle.
Would you say that the pineapple is more dominant than passion fruit?
Yeah.
I think that the passion fruit in a sour form gives you the pineapple notes. Like, I don't know that I taste pineapple, but it does give me the same like after flavor as a pineapple. Yeah,
that's a good point.
But I agree with Jeff. It's a good beer. It's good.
It's good.
I agree. All right. After the break, we're going to dive into some stats about the podcast. Doing 100 shows, we have all kinds of different stats, so we'll dive into that. But our next beer is one. How long have we been saving this for, Jeff?
Well, it was bottled in 2013. I think we got it like 3 or 4 years ago. And it's been a while. It's one of our oldest from the vault.
So 2013 is before we started this show.
Well, the beers of the day didn't start till 2015.
But they probably released like this in 2016, I'm guessing.
Yes, but they put this in the bottle before we started.
Yes.
And episode one of this show was June 16th, 2015.
Damn.
So that is 4 years ago.
But this is a beer that was bottled in 2013 that I find it to be amazing. On the back of the label, it says best before April 13th, 2036. So we got a little time here.
Is mine the same date? Interesting.
How do they pick that exact date? Do the yeast tip them off?
Yes.
23 years this is good for.
That's a Seinfeld joke. I'm not going to steal
13 that. Years. That's bad math.
So anyway, we started this show 4 years ago, and we're drinking a beer that was bottled 2 years before that.
Damn.
That scared me. And I even knew it was coming too.
I think we're gonna have to hire some drywall company to come out here and fix it. Dallas's roof here.
And I think that our limiter on the
did it overshoot the
I'm sure that's gonna require some editing in post. It's okay though. It's worth it.
Wow. It smells great. Ahead.
It's a deep gold color. Lots of bubbles. I like to see that.
Yep.
You always wonder with a beer like this that's been in the bottle for a while, but this is a style that should be very heavily carbonated. But it's a thick, white, frothy head.
So have we said what this beer is? It's called Boone Eau Goose Mirage.
Mariage.
Mariage Parfait. From Lambic, Belgium, Brewery Boone.
Man, I'm getting a little bit of pond water smell in there. It's really interesting. Like, not in a good way, but so hopefully it tastes better. Because there is something organic smelling into it that's like...
I thought it smelled great when I first smelled it.
This is the first goose we've ever had on the podcast. I can guarantee that.
Beer 604? 602?
602. I think it's just... 602. I think it smells like nondescript yeast.
As opposed to a descript one?
Yeah, like where you're like, oh yeah, that's Brett Funk, or it's just kind of yeasty.
It smells like it's been aging for a few years.
It's weird to see a huge label looking at me that says 2013. Andy and I went through the fridge tonight, and we took about 30 beers that are just... headed for the dumpster because they're too old.
IPAs mostly.
Yeah, a lot of IPAs
and a lot of pumpkin ales.
Yes, but
this could have gone there anyway.
Yeah, but to see 2013 and we're not even close to halfway done with when this is best buy, right? We're drinking it way too early. Yeah.
It's really good. Like there's like a champagne quality to this, like a fine champagne quality to it. It does have a little bit of funk, but I think that's by design. But when you drink this, you know you're drinking something that's high quality.
Yeah.
It tastes a little bit to me like slightly turned apple juice.
I was going to say apple cider.
Yeah.
But there's not any vinegar really flavor to it.
It just tastes like a little bit like, you know, when apple juice kind of turns and it starts going alcoholic.
I've drank so little alcohol or apple juice in my life that I've never had some that has turned. That
but yeah, it's like slightly fermented apple juice.
Yeah, that's kind of what it tastes like to me.
Good description. It's good though. It's, you can, like Andy said, it's, you can tell it's super high quality.
It is, but you taste it and you can taste some type of age to it. It's like a little bit
like cheese,
metallic, or there's something about it that tastes a little bit old. Not bad though, but I can taste it. Like there's a quality to it that makes me think that, now maybe it's just ruined because I've seen the label and I see the how old it is.
I feel like there's an interesting like ether to it, where it's like, you know how like when alcohol burns sometimes, it doesn't do that, but it's got like almost the taste of that, not the sensation, if that makes any sense.
I like the, I mean, I think what you're getting at is like the champagne like effervescence and the dryness.
It's quite dry.
It is dry.
It's almost like a cider, kind of, you know, it's a lambic style. I mean, that's what this is, a goose. It's a lambic style. It's just dry and flavorful. And I can't believe it's 8%. Like a lot of these beers that I have that are this dry and champagne-like are like 4 or 5%. To have this at 8% is pretty nice.
8% is pretty crazy because in 2013, 8% was the max. Like that was it, right? That was that's where things topped off. Now it's like your standard double IPA is 8%, no big deal.
Yeah.
But back then, 8% was something.
It was a lot.
Does anybody get a little bit of pepper?
Everyone revisits their beer.
Because the answer was no, obviously.
I get kind of like the white grape.
Like by pepper?
And some, well, some grape, I mean, like a Syrah grape could have like a pepper taste. Maybe that's getting into that flavor, but I get more like white grape.
Oh. I get like black pepper.
That's dust.
I really like this beer. I enjoy it a lot. It's like you go wine tasting. I mean, most people go wine tasting and you go to a winery and you taste all their wines and like then they'll bust out the high-end reserve bottle that's twice as much as the rest of them and you taste it and it may not be your favorite thing that they have, but you taste it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is really good. It reminds me of that.
Does anybody get the oak?
Yes.
I barely get it. I also get, and this is going to sound really weird, I get like a green onion or a chive like flavor kind of in it. And it's actually good. It actually has a really, it's almost like, I think it's the pepper you're talking about. It's like a spice that's in there. And it, for me, it's like a really sharp green onion kind of flavor at the very end, which I enjoy.
I think it's that. It might be a little herbal also. Like,
yeah.
I think we're all on the same track.
I think we kind of screwed ourselves, and I blame myself partially, because it's way too cold.
It is cold.
To be drinking it.
It's a beer that is tough to do, to fully describe verbally. Like, we usually come up with the descriptions, and we talk about all this stuff. This is one that I don't know I can convey to you what it tastes like unless you taste it yourself.
It transcends words.
It's complex. It's fantastic. It tastes very European. I mean, this is, you know, Dallas and I went to Belgium. This is a beer that I could probably sit down and drink the whole bottle sitting on a dock in Bruges as the sun sets. That's what this beer tastes like.
With a goose between your legs?
Yes.
And now let's get into the beer news of the day. All right, the news story today is a little disappointing. I think one of the best beer stories there was in this past year, and probably several years, was the Sierra Nevada Resilience beer that they put the recipe out, and everybody decided, okay, we're going to brew this beer. I'll just read the article here. When California's deadly campfire, worst name for a fire, wiped out the entire town of Paradise and other surrounding areas, Sierra Nevada sprung into action, announcing plans to brew a special pale ale with all the proceeds benefiting the people of the region. Over 1,400 brewers around the country signed up to make the beer in their own tap rooms. nearly a quarter of all the breweries in the United States. But more than half of those brewers have yet to send any money raised from the beer to Sierra Nevada. The news came from a leaked letter from Sierra Nevada to participating brewers. Sierra Nevada has confirmed its authenticity to Fortune magazine. The brewer, however, says it has been in contact with many of the brewers, and while the numbers are concerning, it expects them to honor their commitment. They just need more time. So, interesting idea here. Obviously, it's for charity. Everyone wants to benefit the fire. Everyone signed on to do this. Sierra Nevada offered to foot the bill for the raw ingredients. I think a lot of breweries said, no, we'll do it ourselves with our own ingredients and put out this beer. And they did. And sold the beer in their tap rooms. Some breweries canned the beer, distributed it, whatever. And but now half of them haven't paid up to the charity. I think probably a lot of it has to do with the fact that a lot of craft breweries in the country are not profitable. They struggle to meet the bottom line all the time. Obviously, when you have a situation like this, you want to participate in the grand community of beer. You want to help the victims of the fire, and you want to participate in this great cause. And it's possible that in the end, it's not profitable for you, or it's tough to pay that bill when the piper comes. You know, when the time comes,
it's interesting. Like, after this, a lot of breweries would start posting on Twitter or social media a picture of like their check that they sent to Sierra to like prove, because the last thing you want, and the problem was they didn't publish a list of who has or hasn't paid. So now you have thousands of breweries that are now questioned because they brewed a resilience IPA. And now to protect their integrity, they have to show, no, we already paid. Here's our check. Well, look, we paid him 4 months ago. It's fine.
Yeah, but, which makes sense. But you can't really call out, like,
right.
Sierra Nevada can't post, here's the people that are deadbeat breweries, and post the list and then call them out like that, put them on blast.
But what if Sierra Nevada also provided the ingredients to some of those breweries?
They did.
I know, but do you think that those breweries should be called out?
I think anybody that doesn't pay should be called out, because in one way or another, Sierra Nevada got the ingredients for them, whether they paid for them or not. They got them to them. They signed on to do this thing.
There's a lot of people that went to these breweries and bought this beer thinking that it was going towards this cause.
Correct.
So we had a Flatland Resilience IPA. Does anybody know if they've...
We don't know for sure.
We were there tonight. We didn't ask.
Put your pitchfork away, Joel.
We should have asked.
Someone go get my axe.
Show me the check.
Let me see the canceled check.
I think...
Canceled check.
I think that there are going to be situations where, like Dallas described, you know, breweries aren't making a profit, and so maybe they've run into some hardship where they can't do it. But over, what is it, half?
Yeah. Those breweries should be more resilient.
But this was several months ago. They should have paid up a long time ago. I mean, pretty much everybody, I think everybody agreed to 100% of the proceeds go to this cause.
Yeah.
And so it should have been done at the time. It shouldn't be 6 months later that we're, you know, saying people haven't paid.
My point is that while you could probably give a small percentage of the rest of who's left that hasn't paid up the benefit of the doubt, there are a ton that probably don't deserve a benefit of the doubt and just need to pay.
Yeah. But I go back to, like, it's still the people that did pay now are shed in a negative light because they're guilty by association because there is no list. Yeah. So they may or may not be on it and nobody can prove it.
That's true. There should be a list though, but it's like, if you're not paying, it's just poor management.
Yep.
You brewed one batch of beer, grand scheme of things, big deal. keep track of it, pay them, get it done. I mean, there's victims here that we're trying to benefit.
Yep.
And this was a great thing that Sierra Nevada put on. Hundreds, 1,400 breweries signed on to help, but it doesn't help if you don't pay the bill. So come on, breweries, get on that. Come on, Flatland.
Jeez.
I'm sure Flatland did. I know them.
We are not welcome
reputable
back.
Reputable people. I guarantee I will put my reputation on the line.
I would bet.
If they did not pay the bill, I will find someone to step in and pay it. I will try at least. Can't guarantee anything.
That's great.
All right, let's get into Joel's favorite segment of the night, the New England Hazy IPA section.
Yeah! Give me some of that orange juice with alcohol.
This is the Velocity of Light from Pipeworks Brewing Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Illinois.
I live there.
This is their Northeast IPA. They say it's orange juice with a pinch of alcohol.
Dallas and I went to this brewery way before they distributed it like it is now. This is a double dry hopped oat IPA.
Oh, Pipeworks. Do they do the unicorn ninja one?
Yeah, ninja versus unicorn.
A damn good beer.
So we went to this place. We go in there. They're not allowed to serve us beers. They allowed to serve you shot glasses of beer, like little tiny little sips.
So did you do Century Club?
That's what they really should do. But we probably had like 20 sips of beer each, you know, of different kinds. And they were fine with that. They were like,
as you want.
You know, as many little sips as you want. But they didn't have the license or whatever, which is a little weird. But, you find different laws everywhere you go.
So funny enough, this looks like orange juice.
But man, this is
one of the like top breweries in Chicago. So Joel, you better like it.
It smells amazing.
It really does.
If I could bottle this as cologne and just put it on myself.
It's citrusy. It smells citrusy. It smells hoppy. It smells sweet to me.
Smells like tropical fruit and citrus.
Yeah.
Joel doesn't love the hazies. I think that there's, when they're done very well, like there's not much that's better than that, but there's just 90% of them are just so-so and super sweet or super this or super that. And this one kind of falls into the 90%.
This one is interesting to me. Because right off the bat, it has what I don't like about a lot of IPAs, which is like the burned rubber bitterness, but that fades away pretty quickly. Joel shaking his head.
No, it does fade away quickly to sweet orange juice and cream. And it's like, ugh.
I feel like the oat adds a little je ne sais quoi. That isn't in other ones.
I like this because I don't think it's actually very sweet on the taste. And the hazy IPAs that I dislike are the ones that are overly sweet and lack body. And I think this one actually has body and texture. Perhaps, I mean, I think a lot of hazy IPAs have oat and wheat. That's what gives them the haziness in a lot of the cases. But I like this one because it's not sweet. It is more about like the fruit and the, you know, the hop flavors.
I think it's pretty sweet, to be honest. I think it's also a little syrupy too.
Not my favorite. So Britton said like the burnt rubber taste that she gets from most IPAs. I get that with this and I don't get it with anything else. Like,
it's pretty burned rubbery at the beginning.
And it's sweet, it's watery, it's just not...
This brewery's never going to send us any free beer again.
Ever. Was this free?
Other ones do, right?
But I think it has good, like, tropical fruit, citrus flavors that taste like I like from an IPA. There's no artificial taste. I like this. I mean, I like some hazy IPAs. There's a lot that I really dislike, but this actually falls in the category of the ones I like.
It kind of sticks around for too long.
The dump bucket was just pulled out. Let's just say that.
So if you want to drive over here, Jeff, you can have the rest of this dump bucket.
I feel like I'm breathing like fumes out after drinking this. Like a minute later, I'm still like breathing fumes.
I'm drinking mine. On Instagram, lately I've been posting these throwbacks to previous beers of the day. So like a couple days ago, 2 years before, Ninja versus Unicorn was our beer of the day. And so I posted kind of a throwback with the picture that we took of Ninja versus Unicorn. And our old friend Rich, O'Buckeye Nut, posted that he just had that beer again and he enjoyed it a lot. And I had just had it recently too. Tavor had recently put out Ninja versus Unicorn from Pipeworks. And I had it maybe a week ago. And so, such a great IPA. Solid, very good.
And that's a Northeast hazy as well, right? I mean, it's a good beer.
Yeah, it's not as hazy as this. It
was a precursor to it. I think that it was on the road to that, but we hadn't reached the levels that we have reached today as far as that theme. So it's a little bit of a middle ground, but quite good. This is a little more in the hazy department.
So I went to a brewery last week, and I think they had like maybe 18 taps, and they probably had 9 IPAs, and 5 of them were hazy IPAs, and 4 of them were West Coast style IPAs.
What brewery?
Burning Barrel.
Burning Barrel.
Oh.
And I was like, damn, I'm excited that I get to try 3 types of IPA. I'm sorry, 4 types of IPAs that do not have the haziness in them.
And you really liked the two that you had, right? You tried 2 and you were like, oh, they're fantastic.
And then I just ran out of space to drink anymore.
Yeah.
Dallas, you didn't really say what you thought of this beer.
I like it a lot. I think it's not like super overly juicy and fruity. I think there's a nice hop quality here. I think it's solid. I don't have any problem with this beer.
To me, this tastes a lot like Monkish beers. And I think you guys have all had Monkish. This is what their hazy IPAs taste like. This is what I like.
So do you know what the velocity of light is?
Very fast.
Joel, can you tell me what the velocity of light is?
186,000 meters per second.
Nope. Don't
miles
know.
Per second.
Miles per second.
Very good. Jeff, we were in AP physics together. I don't know if you remember that.
That's a long time ago.
Yes, it was.
There's things I remember from that class, but it was not the velocity of light.
What was her name?
Where's my thing at here?
Try to open push that Obama button.
This is some tasty beer. Because it's a Chicago beer.
This is some tasty beer.
All right, it's that time where we take a quick break. When we come back, we have 3 more beers to try. Some we've been saving for a long time to do on this show, and we're looking forward to it. We'll be right back. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. All right, if you enjoy this show, and I apologize it only comes to you once a month or once every 2 months now, but you know, people have lives. If you enjoy the show, you want to help us out, you can do so by liking us on iTunes and follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We are at Beer of the Day. Very easy. Beer of the Day. Like us on there. Follow us. We post the Beer of the Day every day to social media, and you can see what the Beer of the Day is. Jeff spends most of his waking hours scoping out spots to take pictures of beers of the day and writing descriptions. And he will thank you, and the rest of us will thank you if you follow us on social media and enjoy the beer of the day. Let's get back to the show. 100th episode. This is the classic intro. If we don't have a strange brew, it has to be this. Welcome back to the Beer of the Day podcast. We have our second Northeast style IPA. It is called Lorenzo the Beer Cat from Fat Orange Cat Brewing Company in East Hampton, Connecticut. As Jeff would say, Connecticut.
I like this beer already. Go ahead, sorry. So I like this beer already because it's not as hazy looking as the it's other beers.
Which mild haze.
Mild haze.
Yeah, it looks like beer, not orange juice. So that's a good start.
And the head doesn't, I mean, all the like the legs on it doesn't seem to be as...
Jeff, what the fuck is going on over there?
Sorry, I'm a little late.
So loud.
It doesn't look like it's as syrupy as the other one either.
That's a good head, though.
Good head.
How old is this?
It's fresh.
Brand new.
It smells great.
Why does it taste not brand new?
Maybe your tongue's not brand new.
No, this is fresh. This was canned within the last 2 months.
I think it smells fantastic. First of all, it smells sweet like the last one did, though. But not as it doesn't smell as hoppy or bitter.
It smells sweeter, I think.
It does smell sweeter. Has a little bit of a honey smell to it.
Much less burned rubber.
So can I share that this is Lorenzo the Beer Cat, which is a famous Instagram cat model?
Oh, yeah. Let's hear that.
He's a model?
How many followers does he have?
I got to check, but it's like at least 100,000.
Okay, so I haven't
100,000?
I'm sure...
I haven't seen the cat in real life, but I'm looking at the cat on the can, and it looks like if Wilford Brimley were a cat, and he is going to educate me on diabetes.
Okay, it's 14,000 followers.
How many that's do we a lot. Have?
We have like 5,000, so Lorenzo has more. Three times as much as us.
Actually, it's nearly three times.
And he's a cat.
No, I'm sure he's an owner.
But he's also posted 1,900 times.
Well, so have we. But this is a famous cat model.
His beer is not good. I'm sorry.
They should have named this cat Wilford, not Lorenzo, because he looks like Wilford Brimley in real life.
It's very syrupy. There's like no carbonation. The flavor, it tastes a little bit, it reminds me of Coors Light in a way, like the corn syrup taste that I don't like in beers, and it's not even a pilsner or a lager. Like, it's that flavor in a Northeastern IPA, which I actually like. When they're done well, I actually enjoy them, unlike some others here.
It is syrupy and low carbonation, and if you're going to drink an 8% IPA, which I call a double IPA, there is so many other good ones right now. There's like, it's like the flourishing style of beer is the double IPA, the Northeast style. Every brewery has one. You go to the store and people are paying $20 for a four pack, $26 for a four pack of beers in this style because they're so good. It's very competitive, and this one doesn't stack up to the other ones, in my opinion.
I feel like Andy kind of hit the nail on the head. It tastes like a hoppy Coors Light. It's like the corn syrup.
Here's what it is. It doesn't taste like shit. It's an okay beer. I think it's just light-bodied. And when I like a hazy IPA, the ones that I like, they have a thicker... creamier body. This one just lacks body. It's too thin and too light. That's what I don't like about it. But it doesn't taste like shit. It's got some decent citrus flavors. It just doesn't have the texture that I look for.
It hangs around forever. I feel like I'm still chewing it, and I stopped drinking it like 2 minutes ago.
And we can agree to disagree.
Yeah, and I don't hate all hazies. I just think they're overplayed in the beer scene. And New Glory in Sacramento has some of the best hazy beers, Northeast-style hazy beers that I've ever had. And so it's like, if I'm going to go get a beer, I'm going to go get one of those.
Yep. I was going to bring them up, but I chose not to. And Joel just did.
Why? Like, why did you choose not to?
Just because, like, it's not really relevant to the national audience. But, like, go find the hazies that you really like and get those. Like, don't get this.
I agree. But it brings up something I wanted to talk about, because it seems like to me there is more of a trend towards local beers. I think in my grocery store, people are buying... The beer connoisseurs, the beer people that like beer, are buying the local beers more so than Stone, Firestone, any of these other Lagunitas, Sierra Nevada, any of the big breweries that have their beers all over California. I think a lot of people are gravitating towards the local beers more and more so. I think part of it is the quality has increased, and a lot of local breweries are making very good beers. But there's something in the community, the culture, is causing people to gravitate towards these beers. And it's a lot of times when I'm looking at beers around the country for the show, I'm like saying, okay, what beers are we going to try? I'm often encouraged to just be by the culture here to go towards the beers that are local. And I wonder if that's the case everywhere else in the country. I wonder if that's the case in LA, where Jeff is. I wonder if that's the case in Denver, in Seattle, in Portland, in San Diego, probably definitely in San Diego. But I wonder if that's a common occurrence where the trend is moving from the national big beers down to the local level. And in Sacramento, for sure, that's the case. I'm observing it firsthand, but I'm curious if that's the case all around the country.
I think it is. I everywhere I go, I see that. I think there's an affliction for going for your local brewery.
Affinity?
I'll say affinity. I mean, when we first started drinking craft beer, it was much bigger, like regional. Like, we drink Sierra Nevada, we drink Firestone, and we still drink those beers. But now there's tens and twenties and hundreds of local breweries that we have to choose from the last couple of years. And I think that's what most people gravitate towards. It's just a local desire to try that stuff. And I think that's the case around the whole country.
So you go to the grocery stores now, and the craft beer section at most mega grocery store chains has turned into the same as the old, like, domestic. Like, the breweries are paying for their placement in the stores, just like anybody else in the history of grocery stores. You pay for your product to be there one way or another. And you go to 10 different grocery stores, you see the same beers. But if you go to, like, there's a couple specialty supermarkets, you go there and you're like, oh my goodness, there's so much out there.
And I'm talking about the Nugget. I'm not talking about Rayleigh's.
But no, even Nugget, like, the Nugget's kind of in the same. You go to, like, a place like Cordy Brothers, who's literally a one-off operation, or Taylor's Market. Any of these places that are one-offs, Curtis Park Market.
Well, that's because somebody's curating their beer selection.
They're curating their own.
Yeah.
They're not being influenced by anybody.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. There's someone at the store that's curating that beer selection that's available to their customers.
Well, but like even Nugget Market or Rayleigh's or whatever, they're still curating their own, but like there's an influence of money one way or another from the outside. Mm-hmm. And some of them do it better than others and whatever, but I think you talk about local beer scene, like I'd rather give my money to a local brewery than. So it's interesting. You talk about the cost of a 4-pack of beer, and like a $17 4-pack of beer. Actually, they're a 4-pack of 16-ounce cans, which is actually a 6-pack of 12-ounce mm-hmm. cans or bottles. If I go to the grocery store, a 6-pack of Sculpin is $14. So if I'm going to give $17 to the local guy for a much better product, no problem.
I mean, no argument there. Sculpin's crap. I think it depends on the locale, though. I feel like in Sacramento, we are very lucky to have such a good beer scene. I feel like there are a lot of really good breweries within a 50-mile radius of us, right?
Sure. But you look at the big cities, Portland, they're going to have better beers than Sacramento.
Yeah.
Seattle, too. San Diego, too. L.A., too. L.A. now, too. But, I mean, you know, Fresno, I'm sure they have their good beers. I'm sure, like, all the little bit smaller cities are having their own scenes that are up and coming, and they're probably being featured more. It brings up 100 podcasts in. Things have changed since the beginning of this show. When we started Beer of the Day and this podcast, there was big breweries that had beers that stuck around for a long time. They had, you know, Big Daddy IPA or Stone IPA, or they had beers that were staples, Lagunitas.
Celebration by Sierra Nevada.
Right. They had staples, beers that were staples that you got all the time. We drank them all the time. When you went to the grocery store, you bought the same type of beers, not the same every time, but within the pool, they were common. We've now transitioned to a stage. Also, back then, we had Beer of the Day. We had to come up with a different beer to feature every day. We never had a problem filling that role, but there was a time when I had every beer at Beverages and More, and it was not an issue. Like, I would go to the store, and here's a new one. I'm going to buy that one, and we'll do it on Beer of the Day, right? We've reached the point where it's very common for breweries to never feature the same beer again. So they have a beer, they release it, they distribute it, and then the next time it's a different name, different can, different logo, and it's different. And they all feature different beers all the time, and it changes all the time. And we're now at the stage where in the beginning, we could have San Diego beers and LA beers and Portland beers and New York beers and Boston beers, and we have a pretty good selection of all the beers around this country. At this point now, it's impossible for us to feature beers from around the country because they all change so much all the time, and the market has changed.
I also think buying habits have changed though a little bit too, because absolutely. I feel like at the beginning, when people were doing like the big national breweries and buying those beers, it's because that's all that was available, right? But the craft beer scene has kind of evolved into something like, it's like the Cheers mentality. You want to go where everybody knows your name. It's the same thing that made Starbucks so successful. Is Starbucks wanted to be the third place that you go. If you go home and you go to work, and those are the two places that you go, Starbucks wanted to be the third place that you go to enjoy it. Do they have the best coffee? No. But you're going to go to your local Starbucks, and they're going to know your name, and they're going to know what you want to drink. And I think that's the same type of thing that's happening in the craft brew scene, where you go to your local brewery and it doesn't matter what they're brewing. That's why they brew different stuff all the time. You're going to buy it anyway. You just want to go there because you're a regular at that brewery and you want to go where it's familiar, and it's easy to do that because you have one down the street or one close to you.
Somewhat, but I think that there's a fandom thing where they produce a beer and you want to have the next greatest, latest, greatest beer from that brewery. And so they constantly change the name of it and a couple of ingredients. It's basically the same thing, but they come out with something new. Mm-hmm. And they're always switching what it is locally, and people glom onto that, and they know what they like in their area. And the breweries around the country have sort of gotten into that. I think the big ones are still sticking to the I have a name staple type thing. They have their staple beers and they're trying to introduce other ones into it. But like Stone, I went to the store today and there was three beers that I had never had before that were Stone branded, different styles. And I bought them just to try them. But I don't see those competing with anything that we have locally here.
I think there's also an aspect of how fresh is the beer. I think especially with IPAs, I never, when we first started Beer of the Day, looked at the date of an IPA. I like always look at the date of when it was canned now on any beer I buy. Because to me, on especially a hoppy beer, not necessarily with your stouts or porters or even with your sours, but on any hoppy beer, I check the date.
Yeah, but that is that a function of your education or is that a function of turnover?
I think it's a function of my education, but I think there's an advantage to the local beer scene is that normally you're getting beer that's distributed quickly.
For sure. I think there's also just a desire to support your local brewery. And if you have two beers that taste about the same, most people, pretty much everybody, is going to go towards the local brewery because there's this community aspect of supporting the local place. And I think that is very powerful, especially in the U.S. It's kind of like how you go to Europe and every town has their own, you know, one or two beers and that's what they drink. I think that is what is happening in the U.S. with the craft beer scene.
Yeah, it's definitely a change that I've noticed severely, even in the last year. It's become more and more magnified.
Yep.
Okay, let's get into the next beer. This is one that is a special beer. It's from Unibro. Oh, man, that's loud. 25th Anniversary Blonde. Delenfer. It's a Belgian strong ale. 10.5%, according to Beer Advocate, our friends. Is that what it says on the bottle, Jeff?
Yes.
Quebec, Canada, where my ancestors are from. This brewery out of Canada has always managed to produce a high-quality Belgian beer, Belgian facsimile, that has stacked up with the true Belgian beers, in my opinion. I've always enjoyed their beers. And so when you can get a special release from them, 25th anniversary beer, for any brewery in North America, 25 years is big news. And so you're almost guaranteed that they're going to come out with something good for this.
So this one is, it's got like a copper color, and it smells like bread and butter and brown sugar and caramel, and it also smells like what's that, creme brulee? Mm. Oh my gosh, it has all of those smells up front, and man, I'm dying to try this.
I have barely any bubbles, and there's quite a bit of sediment that's like in suspension, which is kind of cool. It's not really like moving around. It's kind of sticking. There it is.
It does smell incredible. Everything Joel just said is spot on.
Thank you, Jeff. That's the compliment from you. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's good. It's good. It has a very like bready taste. I get like just a hint of cinnamon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But not. I hate cinnamon in beers or drinks or coffee.
Yeah.
But like it's there and it's welcoming.
I also get a little bit of like raisin or dark fruit.
Yep. A little bit of like gingerbread house, but like more butter. There's so much like butter flavor into it that it actually makes it taste so smooth.
I agree. I get butter and brown sugar.
Mm.
It's a sweet, but anyway, that's tasty.
It's sweet, but it's balanced. Like it's sweet when it's there, but I feel like it doesn't linger, so it doesn't bother me because it's not hanging around for a long time. That's good.
I think there's a good amount of banana also.
Yeah.
Which any Belgian beer worth its weight should have some banana. In my opinion.
Agreed.
Chambly.
Full of Chambly.
Maybe that's the Chambly yeast component. I don't know. I can't think of any beer that doesn't have that taste. That's shambling.
So a brewery like this to get to 25 years, I mean, I can't imagine trying to figure out what beer you're going to brew for your 25th anniversary beer. That's a big deal. This is pretty good, but that, you know, it's hard to pick a beer like that.
Also, it's not, their beers are all this good.
Yeah.
And like Maldite, and like you get into the higher versions, the 10% and stuff of that beer, it's like this.
Speaking of 10%, if you kept drinking this, do you think it tastes like it's 10%?
No.
I don't either. I think it's super smooth.
Yeah.
It's also the case of any Belgian beer worth its weight.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're 10% and
sneaky.
And they're sneaky.
Fantastic beer. If you guys get a chance to grab this beer, man, I don't know how old this is, but get it. It is a great beer.
This one's, I think, best we got by it like 20, a year 22.
Ago, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't want to try the next beer.
What about, somebody mentioned cinnamon. This says it's brewed with spices, but if this didn't say that on there, I don't know that I would detect any spices. I just get like some butterscotch and brown sugar and butter, banana sweetness. Fantastic beer, but I don't get a lot of spice flavor or spices.
I didn't read the bottle, so I didn't read it first. So, I mean, it's not heavy. And that was kind of my point, is like it's barely noticeable.
I did read the bottle, so I was prepared for some spice, but I think that it is very, very subtle.
Where Joel said creme brulee,
yep.
It has so many of those burnt caramel.
Mm-hmm.
Where yeah. It works so well, but it's subtle in the spirit. They don't overwhelm you with anything. It's just smooth and sweet, dessert-like, but not over the top, and so well done. Very good job there. I don't think I've had a bad beer from them, for sure. There's no way I have. All right, so 100 episodes in, we've done 600 beers up until this show. So the last show we did, episode 99, Jeff and I did beer 600 as our final beer. So of the 600 beers, what do you think is the most prevalent style that we've had on this show?
It's gotta be IPA. Double IPA. IPA or double IPA?
I'd say a regular IPA.
So if I just take every IPA, whether it's double, single, triple, whatever, and say it's just an IPA, we've had 178 IPAs out of the 600. 85 beers have been categorized as seasonal ales, which is
pumpkin, Christmas.
Christmas, whatever. And then 79 have been categorized as Belgian ales.
Damn, that's a lot.
And then 78 stouts. So almost as many stouts as that. And then it drops off to 43 strange brews that we've had. So if you delve into the categories, of the 178 IPAs, we've had 89 India Pale Ale IPAs, 64 Imperial Double IPAs. So the top two beers that you have is IPA and double IPA, followed up by Strange Brew, number 3 at 43, Imperial Stout, 37 of those, 27 pumpkin ales, 26 vegetable fruit beers, 19 Oktoberfest beers, 19 American Pale Ales, 19 brown ales, 19 sour ales.
I want to go around to a round robin.
18 porters, 16 saisons, 16 Belgians.
What's the best strange brew that you remember? And I'm going to start because I don't want anybody to steal mine. The Lily Ale.
The Lily Ale was from Columbus, Missouri.
Columbia.
That was my favorite of all.
Columbia, like, Missouri.
Burr Oak.
It tasted like cereal, like Captain Crunch. Right?
Tasted like flowers.
That was very good.
There was one, and I'm hoping it was on the real show and not one of our test shows, but it was a Leaps of Faith series from New Belgium, and it was a dry hopped sour IPA. It wasn't, no, sorry. Yeah, dry hop sour. I don't remember what it's called, but it was amazing. And it was, I mean, you see those around every now and then now, but like it was the first one we had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this sounds strange. So that was a strange brew. And it was really good.
So of all the breweries, how many, what's the top brewery we ever had? How many
top rated?
Top, yeah. Most, no, the number of beers we've had on this podcast from a brewery.
Sierra Nevada.
Alma Gang.
Firestone.
Firestone.
Oh, Firestone might be.
On a show or just on the site?
Show.
I'm going to say Alma Gang.
No, Alma Gang.
We've had 18 Stone beers on this podcast.
Ooh.
Now we've had 16 Claremont beers. Claremont is a small LA brewery. We did a podcast from...
We drank 10 beers on one show.
Right. So we've done 6 others besides that. So that they get a bump from that.
Clown Shoes?
Oma Gang, number 3. Dogfish Head, number 4. We did a show at OTP where we drank only Dogfish Head beers.
Oh, that's right.
So there was 8 beers on that episode.
We did a lot of Clown Shoes.
Well, I say we did a lot of Clown Shoes, didn't we?
Not lately, but a couple of years ago, yeah.
Rogue is number 5. Sierra Nevada is number 6. Clown Shoes is number 7. New Belgium's number 8. Boulevard's number 9. Founders is number 10.
How many breweries have we had? The brewery?
The brewery is number 11 at 7. Coronado, Almanac, Toppling Goliath, Four Hands, Anderson Valley. And it goes down from there. Very interesting. 600 beers. It's pretty good. We remember pretty much most of them.
Like every single one.
If I said a beer and mentioned it to this table, I bet that someone could come up with a beer.
Agreed.
Try it real quick because I don't think I can. Personally, I don't think I can. Well, I wasn't here for a lot of them.
All right.
Marionberry Braggot.
I do remember that one. That was one of our first shows.
You remember the Shipyard? Wasn't it? Shipyard.
That was a rogue beer.
Shipyard
Smash Blueberry.
Oh my god!
Oh, that one was so good.
That's probably mine.
All right, I have. Hold on. Brewery title. All right, so I'll skip 3 Philosophers. I'll skip Firestone Oktoberfest. I'll skip Prost, y'all. How was the Saranac Pumpkin Ale?
Saranac,
terrible.
Well, you started with the word pumpkin, so I have to agree with Jeff.
Jeff, how is Pocket Watch from Urban Artifact?
I've had that
too. Excellent. It's probably the best beer ever from Urban Artifact.
It's a good beer. I've had it too.
Actually, all of their beers are great.
Slide Whirl wasn't that great.
How was the Mosaic Sour from Fair State Brewing Cooperative?
That one was amazing.
Good.
That was the bottle that has like the, it looks like an 8 or an infinity sign on it, right?
That was the brewer that had a zipper down.
Anyone remember the Wrecking Ball Imperial Stout from No Lee Brewhouse?
Nope.
Yeah, I do. That was, we took the picture on your pool table. That was a good beer. No, is it No Lee or No Lies from Washington, right? Seattle, I think, maybe.
Remember the Sriracha Hot Stout from Rogue Ale?
Oh, man.
The red bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we've had a lot of good beers from the show.
Voodoo Donut.
It's been a lot of fun doing this, and we will continue to do it whenever we can as far as our schedules fit. Some of us have small children now, and it takes up a little bit of time, so the episodes are a little bit more spaced out, but they're better if you wait for them. Everything's better if you have to wait. All right, let's get into the final beer of the night. We have Ninkasi Ground Control. Now, this is one that we have done before on this program. It's a repeat, but this is the second generation of this beer. It was fantastic the first time, and I'm looking forward to having this again. This is the second generation of this beer. It was brewed with yeast that has been sent into space.
So did they go back to space to get it right, or did they just...
They just cultured.
They just kept the same yeast.
So I'm excited about this because this was
the next generation.
The next generation. I'm excited about this because I remember really liking this the first time I had it, but back then I hadn't had that many beers, so I didn't have a lot of like experience. And now that I've had significantly more beers than the last time I had this one, I am excited to revisit it and see what I think.
So this style is an imperial stout, 10%. It's with Oregon hazelnuts, star anise, and cocoa nibs.
And it smells fantastic.
This was one of my favorite beers that
me too
I've ever had.
And I was skeptical at first. I was like, oh, the beers went in the yeast went in space. They're it's just a gimmick, right?
Aside from that, it's amazing.
Aside from the gimmick part, I thought this beer was amazing the first time I had it.
It pours a very dark brown color. It might even be black. No, not quite. Two fingers of a thick tan colored foamy head.
It smells amazing. It smells like molasses. It smells like oatmeal. It smells
We've had this for 3 or 4 years. I mean, this is not a new release.
No, this beer came out towards the beginning of this show, and we had it on the podcast within the first 10 episodes. And then shortly thereafter, they came out with a second release of it that we kept and saved and stored in the bottom of the fridge for years.
I know that I've moved twice since acquiring this beer because I made sure to keep it in cold storage the whole time. So that's how old it is.
Did you like plug in your refrigerator in the U-Haul to make sure?
I had very short moves.
Okay.
But so I made sure it was pretty cold.
Yours could be tainted then.
No, I think it's fine.
I'm not sure you're as scientific as Andy is, and so I'm a little concerned that you didn't use the proper steps to get it from point A to point B without losing degrees.
I'm very careful.
So Andy and I are just having a moment over here because it is as good as I remember, if not better.
It's like if all chocolatey stouts are some form of hot chocolate, this is the one you go to like the local chocolatier and it's $9 for a cup of hot chocolate.
And it's worth it.
The best hot chocolate you've ever had. And that's what this is.
This beer was featured as Beer of the Day July 9th, 2015.
Damn.
Almost four years ago,
this was Beer of the Day. So we had it on the podcast shortly before that. And then when this one came out, maybe a year later, we bought it and have been saving it since then.
It's fantastic. It is incredibly well balanced. It's also complex, I would say. There's a lot going on, but everything that's happening works well.
The hazelnut, like,
it's just so good.
It's not super prominent, but you know it's there. So good.
I think the hops are very earthy. Like, this just, there's like a dirt taste to this that is actually enjoyable. It's like earthy hops along with hazelnut and other nuts.
I feel like it has a fairly prominent roasty malt.
Yeah.
But it's not like the roasty malt that you get in like a coffee stout. It's just, I don't get coffee, but I get the like a roasty malt or oat or, I don't know, it's fantastic.
I actually get a lot of coffee.
I do too.
It's roasted malt and coffee.
But like a medium or light roast coffee, not...
Yeah, it's not real coffee. Not like
dark bitter.
Yeah.
Like you get coffee, some, coffee
there's
stouts.
There's some like dark chocolate flavors too.
Sure.
Or is it maybe more milk chocolate?
Like there's coffee stouts that it's like very prominent coffee. Yeah. Like that's not this, but it does have some coffee notes for sure.
Is this sweeter than you remember? For 10%, incredibly unnoticeable.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the case on the first one. I kind of remember saying that.
I don't know if it's, I don't, it's so long ago, I don't remember if it's heavier or lighter, but I would say it's a very easy drinker. I think that the prevalence of 10% to 14% stouts in the area or just in the beer world makes it lighter now than it was then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Back then, you find a 14% stout, like there's like three of them all that come out all year long, and now you can go any time of year to the grocery store and buy one.
True.
I feel like for an Imperial Stout, this is incredibly drinkable. I think a lot of people would find some sort of redeeming quality in this beer.
It's not boozy at all.
No,
at all.
Not at all.
No. You cannot taste alcohol.
Even people who don't drink stouts, I think, would find something to like about this.
Yes.
It's super nutty.
Yes.
Not in a good or a bad way, but you gotta like nuts to like this beer.
All right. Any other final thoughts on this one?
Glad we had it.
Yeah. I like the creaminess in it. The mouthfeel is creamy and smooth.
I feel like for an Imperial Stout, it's very balanced. A lot of them tend to tip the scales one way or another, whether it's being syrupy or boozy or overly roasty. And I feel like this one is just balanced in all of those categories.
Agreed. All right, well, let's recap the beers we have tonight, and then we'll figure out our favorite beer of the day. Britton, you want to take us through the beers we had tonight?
All right. We started with the Petite Sour Passion Fruit from Crooked Stave, and then we went to the Boon Oud Goose Mariage Parfait. Then we had the Velocity of Light Northeast IPA. We had Lorenzo the Beer Cat Northeast IPA.
What?
The 25th Anniversaire Blonde de l'Enfer Belgian Strong Pale Ale from Unibrew. And well, we finished up the night with the Ninkasi Ground Control Imperial Stout second version.
All right. Joel has been wiping the dust off the wheel for the last couple of minutes here. And so I think we have it ready to roll. We're going to spin it here. Still goes pretty strong. Who is it?
Me.
Britton.
So, no... Actually, it's between the last two. It's between Ninkasi and the 25th anniversary from Unibrew is an excellent beer, but I have to go with Ninkasi Ground Control. It's just as good, if not better, from what I remember. It's an amazing Imperial Stout that is like my category that I love in general, and this is an excellent, excellent version of an Imperial Stout.
Very, very good version. Possibly to be different, but also very good. I'm going to go with the Boon Oud Goose Mariage Parfait.
Goose.
That beer, it was very old beer, had been aged in our refrigerator for a long time, but it was very balanced and complex, and it tasted like it had been aged for a while, but it gave you flavors that you don't get in any other beer at any other time. And we do a lot of beers in the show where it tastes like some other beers we've had before. That is one, unmistakably, there is no way it could taste like anything else that you've ever had. And I enjoyed that one a lot. So that's my beer of the day. Jeffrey.
I agree with both of you. And my two top rated beers were the Boone Brewery that Dallas just picked and Unibrew. The 25th anniversary ale. I'm going to go with the Unibrew. That beer just had the most complexity, the most balanced, smooth flavors. You don't see too many craft breweries these days that can get to a 25-year anniversary. Those are pretty rare. And so they got to pick a unique, special beer for that. I liked everything about that beer. It's a Canadian beer. I liked it. It was extremely enjoyable. I would love to pick it up again. That was my favorite beer of the night. So I'm going to go with the Unibrew 25 Blonde L'Enfer.
So,
Andy, what are you going to do?
I'm going to go, and I probably did this already, you know, some 3 years ago or so. I'm going to go with the Ground Control from Ninkasi. And I'm probably going to say the same thing I said back then. It was that the the gimmick of going into space had probably nothing to do with this beer. And you wish that they would just, and maybe they do. I don't follow them that closely. Maybe they do brew this beer continuously in the absence of the space yeast, right? Because that doesn't add any flavor, right?
Or does it?
Or does it? This is one of my favorite beers I've ever had. It's not super sweet. It's not that super boozy 14% to 17% imperial stout.
Yep.
You can drink it fairly often, and it's not going to kill you as far as alcohol goes. Super enjoyable. I drink it every day.
And it's been to space.
And it's been to space.
Has anyone else here been to space?
It's out of this world.
No one has.
So I'm gonna cause a tie because we've got one tick for the Goose. We've got two ticks for the Ninkasi. And I'm actually going to pick the Unibrow. The Blonde Lampfeuer. It's all the things that Jeff said, but also when I smelled it, I was like, man, that is like I'm stepping into one of the best bread bakeries I've ever been to. And I sniffed it. And then when I tasted it, it was the same thing. I'm tasting something very complex, but also all of this richness and butter as well as spice all just into one beautiful sip. And that's why that is my beer of the day. Good job, Unibrow.
So what's the beer of the day? What's the consensus?
Unibrew?
Yeah.
I think it's ground control because it went to space. Like, if you have a tiebreaker, like, that's it.
That'll close it out for our 100th episode. I can't even wrap my head around that. 100 episodes? You'd think we'd be better at this by now. But it's still fun. Even if you're not good, it's still good. It's like sex.
For some people, it's really good. For others, it's doable.
Serviceable.
Hey, we're still going at it every month or so.
Just like a podcast, whenever you can get it done.
The comparisons are endless. Anyway, we thank you for continuing to listen to us. Follow us on social media at Beer of the Day, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We'll see you on episode 101 for Andy Hamilton, Britton, and Joel Miner, and Jeff Miller. I'm Dallas Hellicker. This has been the Beer of the Day podcast.
Yeah.